welcome to episode 19 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
And on this episode of the podcast, we're going to be reviewing Avengers Age of Ultron. The biggest film of the year so far. Might not end up being the biggest film of the year. There's a couple of other big ones to come, but
shame.
Yeah, but it's definitely going to be up there, going to be one of the front runners. It's a bit of a superhero special this week. So as well as the Avengers sequel, we're also going to be talking about our top five superhero films of all time. And the rewatch this week is Tim Burton's 1989 classic, Batman.
Awesome.
Anything else to say, lads?
No, nothing. Let's just do this.
Let's get started. We've just been to see Avengers Age of Ultron, the final film in Phase 2 in the MCU. Of course, the sequel to Avengers, or Avengers Assemble as it was called, on these sides of the pond. Gentlemen, usually it's at this point I will throw to one of you. I usually throw to Adam and then Mark cries that it's gone to Adam and not him first. I'm going to make a little bit of a change. I'm going to start it off. One word. Underwhelmed.
Wow.
Thoughts. Thoughts.
We've not actually discussed this in any way, so we've just left the cinema, we're now here, we're recording, so it's really good. I agree. I was not blown away, and I wish I had been. Now Adam's going to say it's the best one he's ever seen.
I liked it, I thought it was great, but then I think my expectations of it were a lot lower than both of you.
Could be.
Yeah.
I went in thinking that this was already a nothing film. It didn't fit in with what they were planning. So the moment they launched the plans for Phase 3, which was obviously Civil War, Infinity War, I couldn't see where this fit in. So I've deemed this since then as a stopgap.
Yep.
Fair enough. And one thing we should say at this point is this is going to be an incredibly spoiler-filled review. We can't really discuss the review without getting into the nitty-gritty of it.
So yeah, if you haven't seen the film and you don't want it spoiled, we've put the times down on our episodes. So if you're on iTunes or Podomatic, read, skip this section and then come back to it later on. Yeah, I went into the cinema today wanting to absolutely love it, to feel like that kind of feeling I got when I came out of the cinema when I saw Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And I really felt like when I came out of that, I was absolutely buzzing and didn't want to stop talking about it. And I there's nothing that I can say bad about this film, as in like, oh, it was terrible, but I wish I'd gone in with the kind of level of expectation that Adam did.
Yeah. I think for me, I don't think it was a bad film. I enjoyed it a lot. I think it was a good film. It was just underwhelming. And I think there was so much going on that it seems like a lot was missed. Things happened without any real build-up. Like Ultron coming to life, the robot villain of the piece, just seems to happen in about 30 seconds. There's very little explanation of how this sentient being has come to be, from Tony thinking it to it happening to him wanting to take over the world. There's so little build-up that it made me think, was this two-hour film? Or, in fact, I know it was a three-hour film. I think Joss Whedon has said there's a three-hour cut. And I think it's those sort of explanatory things, if explanatory is a word, that just seem to have been missed. It was just this thing, then that thing, then the other thing, without any link between them. That's what the whole film seemed like to me.
Yeah, I think it was a case of, here is your phase two, the end of phase two. In phase one, our heroes are these ragtag bunch of misfits. Over the course of phase two, we've seen, Thor become a more well-rounded person. We've seen Tony Stark become a more well-rounded person. So it's kind of going, here they are at the end of phase two. They're a good team. They work well together. They do this, they do that. Mm. Now they're starting to break apart again. But it was rushed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was rushed quite heavily.
This film is rushed.
Yeah, it is.
It was his, because this is one of the things that really annoyed me as well. They started like it was building to Civil War. But I don't want to jump ahead too much in the review. When the film ends, Tony Stark and Cap seem on pretty good terms.
Yeah, despite having a bit of fisticuffs midway through.
So has Civil War already happened? Did we miss it? And this is the thing I don't get. I thought that there'd be more about that in this. And I know Ant-Man's coming next as the first installment of Phase 3. But I thought with this, there's going to be a bit more about, okay, Stark's created this machine, this artificial intelligence, to protect the world. It's gone horribly wrong. He actually now wants to annihilate mankind as the safest way of protecting the world, which is another thing that annoyed me, because That's not really explained.
Yeah. Again, it's just they jump from one thing to the next without the explanation in between.
In the comic book universe, you understand why Ultron begins to hate mankind and sees them as a problem. But in this, it's like he just has a few throwaway lines where he then all of a sudden deems mankind the issue.
Yeah.
While I was in the cinema today, I was thinking to myself, you two are probably having a lot more of an understanding than me because I've not read all Civil War. I've not read the story that this is based on. I'm quite a novice to it all. I've not done it. So I've just enjoyed the Marvel films that have come out. And I was still there looking for lots of gaps. And I was thinking, why is this happening? And this seems rushed. And it's good that both of you are kind of saying it as well. Because you're not like, well, actually, Mark, if you've read the comic, you'd realize that this is the... But I was still there like, there was this big build-up to us seeing this robot that was going to destroy everything. And I do honestly feel like I saw about 20 minutes of him and then he was destroyed. Mm. And I really, considering it was this massive force, I don't want to compare it to something like Transformers, that's ridiculous, but they do a build-up for an hour of the baddie and the massive fight and they go on for ages. It felt like there's this, I don't know, I kept looking at my watch thinking there must be about another hour yet, and it wasn't. It was over, and I was like, is that it?
And to pick up on a point that you've said there about how you're not familiar with the comics, you shouldn't have to be. That's the point. You know, you're supposed to be able to go into these films as a novice, as someone who hasn't read the books, and understand what's going on. Adam and I were able to fill in the blanks ourselves because we've read the books. We shouldn't have to do that. You shouldn't have to do that, Mark, as someone who hasn't read. So it's even worse for you. They're supposed to be able to present a cohesive film that everyone can understand all the elements of, and I don't think they did that because, as we've said, it was rushed.
And a lot of people have said to me, around me, oh, I'm really looking forward to taking my kids to see this film at the weekend.
Yeah.
And I know what kids are like. They absolutely love the fact that Thor's got this big hammer and it's Iron Man in his shiny suit. But I honestly think kids will not enjoy this film very much. I think it's... Do you know what the worst thing about this film was? I couldn't put my finger on it, what it was that was leaving me a bit flat. And when I was watching it at the start, it's a really good action scene. You're straight away thrown in. They're going through the woods. They're all attacking each other. It's brilliant. And some of those shots are amazing. And I was like, every character is showing their thing. And I was like, this is ace. But after that, there was about an hour with hardly anything happening. I literally was like, not bored, but just not blown away. And then the next scene came that was an action scene. It was really well put together. And then there's another half an hour. And then there's the relationship and... Hulk getting it on and being all emotional and the relationship building. I was just bored.
There were periods that were boring.
That shouldn't happen. The first one, I was not bored once. Mm. It is no way as... I'm saying it now, and I hope... Maybe, Adam, you'll agree, I'm not sure, but it was nowhere near as good as the first one for me.
Well, I don't think the first one's very good as a standalone film.
No, because you always say it takes the... all of the other films to make that what it is.
But it's the way it's presented to you. It's... In here, in Age of Ultron, there are too many pointless characters.
Yeah.
Ulysses Klaue, Andy Serkis plays him. Yeah. What is the point of having there except to basically say, we're having a Black Panther film.
Here's a hint.
Here's his enemy.
Yeah. So that's what that is. That's built him up for that. The other pointless character for me was Quicksilver. And, you know, again, massive spoiler alert, he dies at the end.
I just wonder whether they didn't want to use too much of him because
there's already one in the Fox films,
X-Men universe.
Which was done better. The X-Men version of Quicksilver was much, much better than this version.
I'm not sure about that.
Really?
I think they made him look a lot more badass than the one in Days of Future Past.
But the way they made him look badass is he'd run really fast and then stop and he'd be in a sort of superhero pose and then look around for where to run to next. But he didn't do anything. Whereas the guy in X-Men Days of Future Past did some really cool things with bullet. You know, there's that whole scene where they're breaking Magneto out. And
churning the stuff
around. And that was brilliant. And that really gave you a sense of his character and I enjoyed him. Whereas I got no enjoyment from Aaron Taylor-Johnson's version at all. So I was glad he died.
He's no Barry Allen.
No.
What you just said about Andy Serkis' character, I couldn't believe that he was gone within about 15 minutes.
Well, if that, it was 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't think it was 15.
Yeah. And that's on the trailer and the pictures that have been coming out and the stills, I was like, he's going to have a big part in this. Shame.
That's the thing, though. It was basically like, here's Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver, intimidating him. Oh, he's not intimidated. He must be quite a badass.
Yeah.
See other film where he'll appear.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It was pure setup.
Marvel is losing its charm.
That is bold.
They are doing pointless crossovers now.
Danny, you're being really bold there. Very, very bold.
What I'm saying is, in the original Phase 1 and start of Phase 2 films, the crossovers they did had a point. They served a purpose.
Yeah.
Recently, they haven't.
Well, they serve one purpose, which is to set up future films. It's literally, that's all it is. Like we've discussed with Ulysses Claw, that is what it is. It's setting up the Black Panther film. There are a couple of other things that I wanted to pick up on. We'll stick with characters for the time being. Ultron, I'm on the fence about. I know you should never judge a film based on what you want rather than what happens. That's a fool's errand. But I wanted him to be a stone-cold badass. But he's not.
No.
He's kind of quirky and making quips. Now, I know that makes sense because his god, his dad, really, was Tony Stark. So he's got a lot of Tony in him. So that's why he's, you know, quipping and making jokes and little asides. But that didn't work for me. He was supposed to be this robot overlord who should be able to just be a complete badass and not make silly little jokes. It sort of weakened the character for me.
It's an issue in the backstory as well. In the comic universe, obviously, he's created by Hank Pym, who is a scientist, outright cold-blooded scientist, who is the original Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they've had him created by a scientist who's got a quirky sense of humour. So that's been inbuilt into him as well. It doesn't make sense to have Ultron in this way. And the Ultron bots look far more menacing than Ultron.
They do, yeah.
Great point. That's the one thing. You know, when they're all coming, and that's one thing that looked great, when they're all coming at once, and it was literally terrifying when he came on screen. And this is me really picking it to pieces now, but I didn't even like the way his mouth moved. It was too
human-like. Yeah, it's supposed to be a robot.
And it was annoying me, and it was making me think of like an animated, his mouth wasn't just going up and down like it should do. It was actually, it had like lips that moved perfectly. And that's when I was thinking, this is getting onto sort of Transformers territory. And I didn't like that. It pissed me off. Yeah. I just wanted his mouth to be old school, like Iron Man or the Iron Giant.
I agree with you entirely. And this is why I think they went too far with the motion capture, because I know that James Spader was in not just a standard motion capture suit, but he had one of these sort of specially designed helmets on that I think sort of points light at every element of your face, and then it can translate the way your face moves into the movement of the character. And you could tell it was James Spader because there were certain ways he nodded his head and stuff that were straight out of The Office. You know, we've seen him move like that in real life, but I think they then translated his lip movements too closely because, as you say, he's supposed to be a robot made of metal. His mouth wouldn't move like that.
No.
It was too lifelike.
And that's frustrating because I didn't want to. I only wanted to hear James Spader. I didn't want to see him.
Yeah.
Otherwise, just get him in the film. You know, that's the truth. I love his voice. It's so unique. On the trailer, it got me straight away.
Yeah.
We joke and we're always doing impressions from The Office, but his voice is so, so unique. And in this, I felt like I was seeing him.
And this is one of the key things, because when they announced James Spader was being the voice of Ultron, I was so excited. It's like, that is the perfect guy to choose. James Spader's voice is fantastic. He's got this menacing undertone to it. No offense, James, but your face doesn't. So they could have built Ultron in the respect of Ultron Prime from the comic books.
Yeah.
And had James Spader voicing that. Now, they can't honestly turn around and say, well, we didn't want too much CGI, because he's all CGI.
Yeah.
You've not got that excuse. They should have made a menacing Ultron.
Ultron
is a stone cold badass, as you said. He is the guy who tore the Avengers apart.
And the thing is, the quotes of Ultron in the trailers we saw, he was a badass, saying really menacing things. And then in the film, it turns out that a lot of what he says in the trailers was chopped up from different sentences. They've used words from sentences half a film apart to create menacing sentences for the trailer, which I think is dishonest.
Yeah.
And then he turns out to be this quippy Tony Stark-esque character, and it didn't work for me at all.
We're going to skip a point here where it got towards the main battle scene. This is one thing I wanted to pick up on. Did you think at any point that Jeremy Renner's character, what's his name?
Hawkeye,
there we go, going to die? Because I thought, because I've not read any spoilers, I thought at this point, is Joss going to actually go and kill someone off?
I would say no. I thought someone might die, and someone did, Quicksilver did. I didn't think it would be Hawkeye, because in the first film, Jeremy Renner, after that came out, was very vocal about the fact he feels he was let down, that he wasn't able to demonstrate his character because he was under mind control the whole thing. So he was never really Clint Barton, he was never really Hawkeye. So Whedon basically promised him that he'd beef up his role for the sequel, which we did. We got a nice bit of backstory. We get to see his family. I really enjoyed Hawkeye in this film, actually. I think he might have been my favourite character in the film. I thought he was great.
It was good to see a lot more of him.
Yeah, so I didn't think he was in any danger at all.
It showed his other aspects. It showed the fact that he's the hardened soldier of the group, as much as Cap was in World War II, Hawkeye's the guy that's been fighting battles all his life. But I did think he was going to die, but that's only because I've had I thought he was going to die in this film since Avengers 1.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I thought with Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch coming into it, I thought he was going to kill someone off.
Yeah. To go on to a positive, based on what you've just said then, Scarlet Witch, I really enjoyed. I thought Elizabeth Olsen was great. I really liked the character.
Yeah.
I like the way they visually demonstrated her powers on screen. You know, the dodgy sort of Eastern European accent aside, I really dug the character. I'm glad she's going to be sticking around for a while.
Both of those look cool. From the moment they came on and I was bought into it straight away.
What, Quicksilver and her?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really was. That was the one thing I loved, because I remember it being at the end of one of the previous Marvel films we first got. Was it that what it was? And I loved it straight away. And that is some of the bit of the film that I'll praise. They always look great. The way it was put together, the CGI, it did make me believe it. It was cool.
I thought there was some ropey CGI throughout the film. Within the opening scene, they're basically storming a Hydra facility, storming a castle. And there's a really sort of fast-paced bit of action where they're on motorbikes and all-terrain vehicles, and it's really fast, and the camera's whizzing around, and the characters are flying here, there, and everywhere. The CGI characters, Iron Man and Hulk, look absolutely fine because they're all CGI. But the human characters, or the characters who have human form, like Thor and Captain America, they do these whizzy little bits of, you know, jumping around, kicking here and there, and it looked cartoony. It looked like, you know, we've discussed before how I don't like the CGI in the recent Spider-Man films, because when he's web-slinging, he looks like a cartoon, and that's what I felt about some of the CGI in this film.
Spot on. That opening scene, I felt the exact same way. I was watching it happen, and there's a bit where I think Thor's kind of smashing his way through things. He lands on the top of like a watchtower and lightning's the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it looks ridiculous.
It looked almost as bad as the CGI from Matrix Revolutions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it felt too video gamey.
Yeah.
And I remember when they do these one shots where they slow-mo, it should be perfection now at this stage with the budget they use on these films. And there are films out there that have done better CGI than this that we've seen.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think Guardians did it better.
Yeah, Guardians was flawless.
You know, absolutely perfection. And in this, we shouldn't even be saying this. It was ropey. It should not be saying that.
I'm not going to, you know, criticise Joss Whedon, because I do love the guy. You know, he's come up with some of my favourite TV series of all time.
Yeah.
I love what his plan for Avengers, I love what he's laid out. Visually, that opening sequence, and I'm going to say it, Schneider could have done better.
Wow.
Because as we've established before,
he's style and no substance.
I would argue that he has some substance, being as I'm a huge fan of Watchmen, but he's more style than substance, certainly. You know, I agree. I think he would have put a better action scene together than that. I do want to have a little bit of a dig at Whedon here. I love Whedon as well. As we discussed on a recent podcast, I've only finally got around to watching Firefly. I really enjoyed it, like a lot of his other stuff. But I think this film was too Whedon-esque, in that there were a lot of dark, serious moments, but every single one was undercut by a quippy one-liner. Not just by Ultron, by every other guy. Even had Cap. One of the things I like about Cap is that he has got a softer side, but he's a fairly stern, straight down the line army man. And in Cap 2, he was very much like that. And in this one, he's making little silly jokes like Tony does. It was too much for me.
The issue comes in when you've got so many different people writing one character.
Yeah, where's the consistency?
So the Cap that we learn about from the first Avenger becomes a different Cap in Avengers to then become the same, the Cap we like again in Cap 2.
Yeah.
And then in this, he becomes someone else's Cap. And it's a very similar problem that comic books have in general. A lot of the time you like a character, which is great, but you like someone's writing of a character as well.
Absolutely.
You've said before about Daredevil.
Yeah. Frank Miller.
Frank Miller's run of Daredevil, you said, is the best Daredevil.
Awesome, yeah.
Whereas there are other parts of Daredevil, other writers of Daredevil that you potentially don't like.
Yep.
And that's all about how you write the character. And Whedon got it wrong.
Yeah, and it's a horrible thing to say about a guy with a great track record, but I think he was off base.
I love his dialogue, and that's one thing I do like in this film. Some of the discussions I was digging, I was buying, I was thinking, this is great. They went a little bit too long, but the point you made about it being too Joss, you know,
yeah,
I actually felt like some of it was like watching a Buffy episode.
Yeah.
Mm. And I really did.
Yeah.
Until one of the superheroes just suddenly went, pew, I was like, this is literally like watching Buffy, which isn't a bad thing because Buffy was good and that's what he's good for, but not now.
Yeah.
And not in a superhero for Marvel.
He's basically gone, people loved Avengers 1. They loved the fights in the end of Avengers 1.
Yeah.
Let's times that by 10 and give them a whole film of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then because of that, because it was so much of that throughout the whole film, it meant that the final battle didn't have the impact because we've already been through two or three other slightly smaller battles, and the final battle in this film wasn't as high scale as the final battle in the first Avengers film. So it felt a little anticlimactic.
And that's why I was looking at my watch thinking, is there now going to be a little more of a tag on, build up even more? Because it just didn't deliver.
Mm-hmm.
You summed it up perfectly there. The final fight for me was the middle fight, and I was waiting for that. Now it's really going to kick off. Get ready for this.
I in no way didn't like this film. I enjoyed it. I sat there, similar to Avengers 1, I sat there and I loved what was going on. It was a treat for the eyes generally. There was some ropey CGI, as you said. Some pointless characters let it down. Some pointless dialogue lets it down. And there is quite a bit about the film that I didn't like.
Yeah.
But I liked enough of it, so I'm not going
to... Yeah, and that's the thing. If you're listening to this and you're thinking, these guys didn't like it, I still love that film. I'll buy it on Blu-ray and I'll probably go and see it again at the cinema.
Yeah.
I believe I went in there with too high expectations, so I blame myself for that. And I genuinely believe I've been spoilt recently because I've bought Guardians of the Galaxy on Blu-ray and I sit and I watch that as often as Adam, you know, every few weeks. Joking aside, I really do. I adore that film. And I've just come off watching some Daredevil on Netflix, which is perfect character development.
Yeah.
No dodgy CGI. And that's a TV series. And I've been spoilt. And now I've gone into this with like, it's just going to get better and better. And it hasn't. And there was always going to happen. Captain America 2, I prefer to this.
Yeah.
And it's just going to take a bit of a drop.
It makes you realise why the Russo brothers have got Infinity War.
They're onto something good there, because speaking of Cap 2, as you guys know, I didn't particularly like that after the first few, and I was underwhelmed by that. I've now watched it two or three times since, and I bloody love that film. And I think the Russo brothers have absolutely nailed it. And I think it's two other chaps whose name I can never remember, who write Cap in his own individual films, who nail the characterization, like you mentioned earlier, Adam. That version of Cap is better written and truer to what I imagine Cap to be. So I can't wait for Civil War.
And I think they had a hand in the script for this as well. So we can't blame it all on Whedon. But you know, with Cap, they might have written him a certain way, but it's all about how the directors want him as well.
Of course, yeah.
So if the Russo say, no, we want less of that jokey stuff. Just be stern, be the war guy, be the hero. But then Whedon's going in his film, no, I want you to be matching Tony Stark quip for quip.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it was.
Everyone I know who's seen the film so far loved it. A lot of people are going to the cinema for a really good experience, and you're going to get that. If you want to go for some popcorn and an adventure, you're going to love it. What I will say quickly is that I didn't feel I needed to see it in 3D. I'm not that bothered. Little bits look good, but I'm happy just to buy that on Blu-ray and watch it in 2D. And I was entertained, but I just feel a little bit shortchanged.
Is there any character from that that you think deserves a standalone film that isn't getting one?
Well, a character we haven't mentioned in this review, who I actually really enjoyed, was the Vision. And I'm very intrigued to see how they use Paul Bettany as the Vision in the future. He was a very... You don't see much of him. He's only really in the last sort of half an hour of the film, and then only intermittently. So I'd like to see them develop him. I don't know if he's strong enough to have his own film, per se, but I want to see more of him.
I loved him as well. I just expect him to have a cup of tea at some point. It's the most British accent I've heard in a long time.
I thought the Vision was cool, very cool. What do you think of Ruffalo?
It's unfathomable to me why a standalone Hulk film is not on the Marvel slate, because not only is he a brilliant character that the people love, Mark Ruffalo is not just some punk they've got to play this guy. Mark Ruffalo is, I think he's been nominated for Oscars. Yeah. Ruffalo is a hell of an actor, and he brings such pathos and depth to the Hulk character. I loved Eric Banner as the Hulk. I thought he was great. I didn't much care for Ed Norton, as we've discussed previously, but I think Ruffalo blows them all out of the water and deserves his own film, and we deserve to see Hulk in his own adventures. So maybe we'll still get it. Maybe Marvel will surprise us in a few months and say, oh, by the way, we didn't tell you, but we've got a Hulk film coming out in 2 years. You never know.
It's odd. I wonder if whether he signed on for X amount of films and then said, I'm not signing another contract after that. So they're sitting there panicking, thinking, well, we want him in all four Avengers films, so we can't have a standalone.
Could be.
Unless he might be doing Foxcatcher 2. Actually, you know what? For this film, he's now made up for Foxcatcher. I'll let him off now.
Yeah, and to be fair, he was very good in Foxcatcher. Nothing in that film was his fault.
No.
No, but I agree. Ruffalo is a great actor. He deserves a standalone film. I just wonder whether it's contractual obligations that means he doesn't get one.
It could be. Unlike Samuel L. Jackson, who's contracted in to be 40 Marvel films, which is why he turns up in every single one.
That's a good thought, and I hope we do see it eventually.
Yeah.
Should we try and wrap this up with a score? It's not going to be easy.
Yeah, I mean,
I want to be fair.
As I've said, I think if I see it again, my views might change. They might not. As I feel right now after one viewing, enjoyed it, good film, underwhelmed, 7 out of 10.
Adam?
Like I said to you guys, I went, this is odd because I went in with less expectation than you. And I couldn't give it higher than a 7.
It's been rare since only last episode where we've all agreed on a score, which was Blade Runner.
That's rare.
Very, very rare. I agree, guys. Bang on, 7. Yeah.
What's the average of 3 sevens? Can we do that, Matt? So, 7 out of 10.
This week's topic, lads, top 5 superhero movies.
Do we want to establish what we mean
by superhero film? Yes, there has been a bit of a discussion on Facebook and Twitter about this. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with, and I hope this isn't going to upset you, Adam or Ben, that basically a superhero is an individual with extraordinary skills that sacrifices their life to fight for good. So basically we can cover Batman, Hawkeye, anyone like that. They don't have to have magical special powers.
So they don't need to be technically super.
No, otherwise it would be quite limited.
Well, half your Avengers wouldn't count then, would they?
No. Are you happy with that?
I'm happy enough with that.
Adam?
Yeah, why not?
Sweet. Right, let's go straight to Adam then.
Okay, so I'll start off with an interesting one. One that has been mentioned on the podcast before. The Mask.
Amazing. It's an interesting one, yeah.
Wow.
Based on the Dark Horse comic of years ago, Jim Carrey plays Stanley Hipkiss, who finds a tribal mask that turns him into the superhero / comedic hero / it's not always necessarily a hero.
Yeah, I think it's kind of anti-hero-ish, isn't it?
Yeah. Very funny film. You guys have mentioned Cameron Diaz before.
Oh, yes.
So many hilarious moments. Back when Jim Carrey was a god.
What, do you mean recently in Dumb and Dumber 2?
No, I mean when he did Dumb and Dumber, The Mask, Ace Ventura, things
Truman
like that.
Truman Show.
So my first one, The Mask.
Yeah, I think it's a good pick.
Wow. I would never have thought you were going to pick that, so I'm liking that a lot. Do you want to go, Ben?
Yeah, my first one is Hellboy. It's a great film. Guillermo del Toro is a visionary director. We've spoken previously on the podcast about certain characters or actors who fit their characters perfectly, so we've referred to Robert Downey Jr. being Tony Stark. And I can't think of anyone else who could be Hellboy other than Ron Perlman. Ron Perlman suits him down to the ground.
Yep.
And it's a great performance. It's a great film. You could argue that maybe the film is a bit overlong, but I thoroughly enjoy it. And I'm actually quite a big fan of the sequel as well, which I know a lot of people aren't so much, but I really enjoy that world. And I hope that the talks they've been having for the best part of a decade about doing a third one, I hope they come to fruition at some point, because the first one is brilliant.
And Perlman's even said, hasn't he, like, it has to happen soon because I'm not getting any younger.
Yeah.
And he's not really sure how long he can actually maintain his physique to do it.
Yeah. Did you see, it's probably about 2 or 3 years ago, there was some kid in America and he was one of those Make-A-Wish kids, and his sort of dying wish was that he wanted to meet Hellboy. So Ron Perlman went through the whole sort of 10-hour makeup process and then turned up at a hospital in a full dude. Hellboy kit.
Legend.
Superb.
What a dude.
I never understand when a lot of people I know don't have a lot of love for that film, and I really never understand why. It's definitely up there. It hasn't made my top 5, but like you said, all I want them to do now is announce a third one, because I think it could be a perfect trilogy.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of the sequel as well, Ben. I know a lot of people aren't, but yeah, I like the sequel.
I'm glad it's not just me out there on my own then.
My fifth choice is going to be Spider-Man 2.
Yep.
Now, I wanted to make sure I had a Spider-Man film in there. Obviously, you know what happened last time I talked about Spider-Man on this podcast.
I was going to say, is it not Spider-Man 3 after the Sandman's great performance?
That
performance that outshines the lead.
That's going to stick with me for 50 other episodes, I reckon. I'm never going to be able to get rid of that. But
no.
as far as they go, I'm not a massive fan of Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, if I'm honest, but there isn't anyone that's done a better job right now. I don't believe Garfield's topped it. I think he's still... he's okay, but I prefer... when I go back and watch them, I'll always go back to his films. And Dr. Ock as a baddie is tremendous. The best baddie I've seen on film so far in the franchise of the Spider-Man films. Mm-hmm. I thought he was amazing. He looked real, where a lot of them are too over CGI, especially in The Amazing Spider-Man now, when you've got Green Goblin looking ridiculous, completely CGI.
Skip to the end.
Nice.
He's done, yeah. He's been waiting for that.
He's got me in the 10 minutes. Good work. But yeah, I'm going to go with Spider-Man 2.
I agree. As you know, I'm not a big fan of the Spider-Man franchise, either the 3 or the 2. But of them, that's my favourite by a distance. And Doc Ock is a superb villain. And I think until Loki came along, Doc Ock was my favourite comic book villain on screen.
I remember at the London Comic Con in October last year, we saw a fantastic Doc Ock cosplay as well.
Yeah.
He had done all the arms. It was awesome, but great.
Wasn't that Doctober?
So I'll go with my next one, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Of course.
Had to be in there.
Yeah.
It's in my top five for sure. It is an awesome film. I actually watched it again recently, and despite what I said 2 episodes ago, well, kind of in line with what I said 2 episodes ago when we first introduced Get Back in Time, it's my favourite film of 2014 again.
Yeah, because you did say at the start, you said Captain America 2, but then you know, quite honestly said, it depends which one I've watched most recently, and now that you've watched Guardians again.
It's Guardians again. Yeah. Do I really need to say a lot more about it?
No. You
know, listen to episode 1, we review it on that.
Yeah, it's in my top 5 as well. I think it's an absolutely brilliant film. Not only is it a great film within the MCU, it's a great film. It's more expansive than that. It to me is up there with Star Wars. Mm. You know, I can imagine, I know my little brother who's 10. I know how much this film grabbed him in the same way Star Wars did for me when I was a kid. I think it's just a huge, huge film.
And talking about Perlman as Hellboy, Batista as Drax.
Very cool.
Again, it was one of those ones where if he goes on to play Drax for a couple more films, we could see the same thing, like no one else could play him.
Yeah.
Great choice. It didn't make my top 5, but it was hard to leave out.
I'm surprised it didn't make your top 5, actually. I thought there are 2 films that I thought would definitely be in all 3 of our top 5s, and that was one of them. So I'm surprised.
Time will tell, young Benjamin. Yeah.
Not my name, but cheers.
Right then, for me, number 4, Watchmen.
Yeah.
Awesome film.
What a film. I was lucky enough to see it in the cinema. I didn't get to see the full director's cut because that was afterwards, wasn't it, on DVD?
Yeah,
and they brought in the Legend of the Black Freighter as well.
Yeah, they animated in, and it was about 4 hours long.
Yeah, they did like an ultimate cut that had it all of that spliced in. Yeah,
a lot of people obviously diss Zack Snyder, but I do believe that was a masterpiece, and I don't use that word every week.
Hold on, he said a film that wasn't made in the '80s was a masterpiece.
I know.
I've actually been thinking about this as a feature. 1 week we'll do Mark's masterpieces. And what we'll do is we'll go back, listen to the podcast. We'll pick out every film Mark's called a masterpiece, and he'll have to justify 1 a week as to why it's a masterpiece.
It's going to be annoying because there's going to be stuff like Sharknado next to this. But I will say it now, it is a masterpiece. I think as far as an adaptation goes from the graphic novel, I've not read a lot of graphic novels, but page for page, it looked brilliant. Mm-hmm. I've loved the characters, and it got a lot of people slagging it off. Again, another film I didn't think deserved it. But for me, it's definitely in my top 5, and I often watch it again and again, the director's cut, and I think it's superb.
I agree with it. It's in my list as well. There was no point in me waiting for it to come back around to me. I might as well just say it's in mine. The thing that you're saying there about Zack Snyder, people complained that he was too literal. He tried to translate the page onto the screen too closely, which I think is a foolish argument. I know the mediums are different. I know comics are very different to film. But something as well presented as the book was, I can understand why he tried to replicate that on screen. Mm. And what, you know, people complained about it, but what else would they want? Something that was completely different, not true to the spirit of it at all. I know they changed the ending to try and make a bit more sense in a cinematic context, but I think he did the right thing.
And I love the ending that he made, the change. Yeah. And like you said, he'll never win that argument. If he changes it, oh my God, he's gone against that graphic novel, the Bible for some people. Yeah. What? How dare he? So he can never win.
I think Alan Moore fans, they're quite rabid fans because he's held up as this god, and I don't think Snyder could win.
No.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
I think a lot of, I mean, Alan Moore fans don't really care, like Alan Moore himself, don't really care for his stuff to go on screen.
Yeah.
Alan Moore himself has said, I made this for that medium, the comic book medium, the graphic novel medium. I don't want them on the screen. So you're already fighting a losing battle from that point.
Yeah.
Back to me then, is it?
Yep.
Well, let's see if I can make it 3 for 3 with Ben in a row. V for Vendetta.
No.
Really?
Not in my list.
Very surprised about that one. Another Alan Moore one.
Yeah.
Changed a lot on screen to what was on page, but I thought, similar to Watchmen, it's probably the best adaptation you're going to get from the graphic novel. Schneider managed to do it quite well, like you said, shot for shot. The Wachowski brothers managed to do a very good job with the V for Vendetta screenplay, personally. I thought Hugo Weaving plays fantastically as V, despite not having a face to emote, which is a very difficult thing for an actor. He really portrays the emotion quite well. And a great performance from Natalie Portman as well.
Yep.
John Hurt as well as Chancellor Adam Sutler. And the whole situation surrounding changing of the story, having to make it different and modernise it slightly as well.
Yeah.
I thought they did a great job with it.
Yeah, I did. I thought what they tried to do was put it in a more global context.
Mm-hmm.
The book was sort of based around British 80s Thatcherism, and that film wouldn't have worked globally if they tried to do that exactly. They had to make it a bit sort of vague or more universal. So I thought they made the right decision. I think it's a great film.
We've talked about that, I reckon, nearly as much as The Thing now. It's close. It's a close one.
My next choice is one. This is the one that I suspect you're both going to have in your list. Dark Knight.
What? Never heard of it.
How many times did you see it?
At the cinema?
Yeah.
10.
Yikes.
I saw it at the cinema 3 times, but it was my number 2.
Yeah.
It wasn't my number 1, but do we really need to talk about this film much?
I didn't have it in any order, but yeah, it's in there. It's one of my favourite films of all time. I've said that on numerous occasions.
It's perfection.
It's a great film. I don't know what we can say. We have talked about it so much.
Well, to be honest, I want to save a lot of it because we're doing Batman.
This is true.
As the rewatch later. I'm going to talk about Heath Ledger and Jack Nicholson anyway, so I'm not going to talk about that now.
So stay tuned for that. For me, my next choice, and my number 3, was Iron Man.
Yeah. Okay,
so Iron Man was for me one that, I think it might be one of the first major Marvel films.
I think it was the first one from Marvel Studios.
Yeah, and they got it right. Again, when you talked earlier about Hellboy, perfect casting, I don't think you could get much more of a perfect casting than Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark. When I went to the cinema to watch this, again, it was the first Marvel Studios film, and it was an introduction before we had any of these other characters on screen, and it just worked. The soundtrack, you know, as soon as I heard some Black Sabbath and AC/DC, and the whole suit looked amazing. And I remember when he first went in the suit and it automatically all closed up on him, I just thought, this looks so good. The casting was superb, and I always go back to this film. If I don't know what to watch and I fancy a superhero film, I'll always grab Iron Man. It always delivers, and I never, ever get bored of it. The second film is absolute dog shit.
I think that's unfair.
I agree. I didn't mind
the second one. Yeah.
I really hate it. The baddie...
Mickey Rourke's character.
What's his bag? Is it Whiplash?
Yeah, it's Whiplash.
Dreadful.
I want my board.
Absolutely dreadful.
Thick Russian accent.
It really annoyed me. And the third one was good, but it leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But Iron Man 1, cemented. Number 3.
Yeah, I didn't think 2 was that bad, though. That's not annoyed me, but I just think it's a bit of a harsh criticism. It gets levelled at it a lot. But Iron Man is the start of Marvel's Phase 1 anyway. And it was a great start for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really difficult because obviously they'd sold a lot of their major characters off to Fox and Sony. So they had to really take a gamble on Iron Man and hope that Robert Downey Jr. could do it.
And that's the thing, and that's one of the reasons why I loved it so much, because as a kid, the Iron Man cartoon was my favourite of the Marvel properties, so I never expected them to do a film, because, you know, you had Spider-Man out there, you had X-Men. I never thought they'd go so deep on the bench as to bring Iron Man out into a film, so I was delighted that they did, and it worked perfectly.
And it kind of shows why when they started selling off properties to do that, to make films, they kept the Avengers as a core.
Yep.
And it kind of shows you why they've done that now. They clearly have plans from day one.
I'm losing track right now because we've all had crossovers. Some of us haven't. Has anyone got more than one left?
I've got one left.
I've got one.
The last one I'm going to talk about is X-Men Days of Futures Past.
Very cool.
Lovely.
This was very difficult. This is probably the fifth one I decided on. And it was between this one, X-Men 2, and Chronicle.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I spoke, but then I kind of ruled out Chronicle because it's not really a superhero film per se. So I kind of ruled it out. So I'm going to go with Days of Future Past anyway. Great film, great cast. We get Fassbender as Magneto. We also get McKellen as Magneto. And we get McAvoy as Professor X. And we get Patrick Stewart as Professor X. And we get Hugh Jackman as Wolverine.
Yeah.
Again, that's another one where the casting fits the character so well.
Yes, yeah. I can't conceive of anyone else being Wolverine other than Hugh Jackman now.
And that's why it's such a shame that he is going to potentially hang it up soon.
Yeah.
Because I think he actually mentioned recently, like you said, that the demands he has on his physique at his age now, it's too difficult.
He's got to be sort of edging towards 50 now, I'd have thought, Hugh Jackman.
But what you guys like Days of Future Past?
I love Days of Future Past. I think it's a great film.
Fantastic.
And I really, really liked First Class. But I thought this was a massive step up even from that. So I can't wait to see what Apocalypse is like.
If the cast for it looks mental already. Yeah.
He's nailed it already. I'm looking forward to it. Ben, number one. Honestly, I can't predict this.
Well, this is actually my favourite Marvel film, and I think it'll surprise you, but it's Thor, the first Thor.
Nice.
I love that film so much. Other than Guardians, which I saw with you guys and then took my little brother to see, Thor is the only one that I've ever been to see twice for me, because I saw it once, thought it was amazing, I was like, I've got to go and see that again. It just visually, the visual aesthetic of the film is great. Kenneth Branagh, I think, did something really special with the look of that film. I thought Chris Hemsworth delivered on every conceivable level with Thor. You know, he was this big hulking beast of a man, but he was also charming and funny in the kind of fish out of water scenes where he first comes to Earth. I just think it works on every single level. It's my favourite one. It's my big go-to. I've watched it on DVD and Netflix and stuff far more than any other Marvel film or any superhero film for that matter.
And I agree with you on that. And again, this is another one that gets a bit of criticism unfairly levelled at it. Because people call it that their least favourite of the Phase 1 films. Now, I'm not sure whether that's just because it's in such, I guess, great company.
Mm.
But, you know, I actually prefer that to Iron Man 1.
Yeah, me too.
Personally.
Yeah.
And I preferred Captain America 1 to Iron Man 1 as well. And it's all very sort of difficult. But I think Thor got a bit of a bad rap.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, the reviews were still great. But compared to some of the other films Marvel had done, it didn't seem like people were receiving that one as well.
Yeah, and maybe
that is what Branagh tried to do.
Yeah, and I don't think people look back on it as favourably now as much as it deserves. I think people don't look at the fact that it really set the scene. It was the first Marvel film of this new phase, that first phase, that went beyond the realms of the earthly plane. It was the first thing that brought in the concept of sort of magic, and you know, it broadened the horizons of what the Marvel Cinematic Universe could be. Without that, there would never have been Guardians.
Or Doctor Strange.
Or Doctor Strange, which is coming soon. So I think it served a really important purpose within the universe and was also just a great film.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Mark, then, number one.
I had my list all wrote out about a week ago. I was sat there, it was all cement. Dark Knight was number one. It was never going to get beaten. We will talk about this film in more detail, but since the rewatch, my favourite film is Batman.
Batman Returns, isn't it?
No.
Starring.
Batman and Robin, no. It's Batman, the original.
Okay.
Ben, last week, you saying this film, I was pretty excited to watch it, and we will talk about it a lot more in a minute.
Yeah.
But this completely wiped everything else out there. It was so good to go back to it, but I'm not going to say anything else apart from it's my number one.
All right.
So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
We threw this out to the social network on Facebook, which is facebook.com/skiptheendpodcast. And this has been the week we've had the most suggestions come through. So we'll whiz through these. So Michelle Martin has said The Dark Knight, Avengers, Watchmen, X-Men and Hellboy. So I think she's picked a good mix between us all.
Yeah.
Zoe Hammond has said Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, Spider-Man 2, Captain America and Iron Man. We've had Richard Payne, who's a new listener. Guardians of the Galaxy, Kick-Ass.
Yeah, great film.
Superman, Avengers, and Big Hero 6. So some nice new stuff there. Paul Dawson, the incredible artist that does all our stuff for us. The Incredibles.
Great film.
Mystery Men, Guardians of the Galaxy. Batman, Mask of the Phantasm. You guys will know that.
Animated stuff.
And he put at the end, fuck it, Daredevil.
Shame.
Graham Doyle, The Dark Knight, Avengers, Batman Begins, Thor and Superman the original. Craig Foster, Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers, Rocketeer, The Incredibles and The Dark Knight. James Howe, Masters of the Universe, Dread, Kick-Ass, Guardians of the Galaxy and The Dark Knight. Ian Young, Batman, the original, Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, The Crow.
Yeah.
Superman the movie. And he's put, I know Mark's going to hate me for this, but Keaton will always be the definitive Batman. So I'm looking forward to discussing that shortly. A new listener, Gregory Pettit. Watchmen, Incredible Hulk. Now that gets a lot of criticism, that film.
I like that.
Is that the second, the Edward Norton
yeah.
one?
Yeah.
I didn't care for that so much. I preferred the first one.
I liked it as a film, but I didn't think Norton was believable as the Hulk. Mm-hmm.
Rocketeer, Guardians of the Galaxy and The Matrix, Jay Pilling, The Dark Knight, Avengers, Dark Knight Rises, wow, Iron Man 2, wow, and Ace Ventura.
What?
I have no idea why really they put that in there, but we'll let them have what they want.
Did he mean The Mask?
Oh, God knows. We've had some come through on Instagram, which is Skips the End Podcast. Cult 45 Podcast has said Dark Knight, Spider-Man 2, Iron Man, Avengers and Blade.
Blade, yeah.
Blade's so good. Monahan underscore Sam, Dark Knight, Avengers, Captain America 2. See, that was going to nearly get in there for me.
It was close for me.
Iron Man and X-Men, Days of Future Pasts. And our good friend Danny 84, The Crow, Dark Knight, The Punisher.
Which one? Oh. It's been three, I think, Punisher movies now. Does he mean the original Dolph Lundgren?
The good one.
Well, they're all terrible.
Iron Man, Spider-Man 2.
The sequel to the more recent ones is the best.
Oh, is it? Is that the one with Tom Jane or with Ray Stevenson?
I don't think I've seen that one.
I think it's Tom.
Mm. We threw it out to Twitter, which is at STTE Podcast. We had Chris, which is Chris MU19 with Superman the Original, Man of Steel. I'm not going to say anything.
I like Man of Steel, but I wouldn't put it in my top.
No.
The Dark Knight.
It wouldn't be in my top 20, but I like
No. Avengers, Captain America, Winter Soldier. Bubba Wheat, which is at Bubba Wheat. Wow. Superman 2, the Donner Cut. Dark Knight Returns, Part 1 and Part 2. They're animated again, aren't
they? Animated stuff, yeah.
Dark Knight, Guardians of the Galaxy and Avengers. DJ Valentine, which is at Trying to Be DJV. Avengers, Dark Knight, Spider-Man 2, Captain America and the Winter Soldier. Everyone's loving all of ours. A couple more to go. We've got Pepe, which is at Connington Sam with Watchmen, Dark Knight, Spider-Man, Hellboy, and Batman Returns. Bit of love for you there, mate. This person must be taking the mic. At Rat1972, Ghost Rider. But then he's really good. Avengers Assemble, Captain America, Winter Soldier, Iron Man, and Superman, Man of Steel.
Just a big fan of Nicolas Cage.
Last couple. Big Bad Wolf, which is at Duppy. Iron Man 1, Captain America 1, Hellboy 1, The Incredibles, and Judge Dredd, the new one. Dredd. Mm-hmm. And finally, Pixie Ray, which is at XX, Pixie Ray XX. You're probably going to hate me for this. I think they've done far too many, so I'm just going to say Batman and Avengers. Fair enough.
No love for Green Lantern, I notice.
Not surprised. I'm quite annoyed with myself for not including any of the animated stuff, actually.
I was thinking that, yeah. It didn't cross my mind to count any of them.
Shame.
Well, we really appreciate that. And if any of you want to contribute, remember, on social media, we'll read out your answers each week. So just keep them coming. I believe it's now Adam's turn to give us a topic for next week.
It is. And we're going to go back to the top threes. And what we're going to do is, because we're reviewing Monsters Dark Continent next time around, I want to hear your top three monster movies.
Good call.
So we've got some Fast and Furious prizes to give away. We announced the contest last week on our last episode. What was the question, guys?
The question to win one of these Fast and Furious packs, which, what do they contain? A hat, a bottle, water bottle, a t-shirt, all sorts. The question was, what UFC women's champion plays a featured part in Fast and Furious 7?
So we're going to give you guys a bit more time to enter that and win. So if you just send in your answers, there's plenty of ways you can do it. You can do it on Facebook, Mark.
Facebook.com/skipstheendpodcast.
Twitter.
At STTE Podcast.
We've got an email address.
podcast@skipstheend.co.uk.
And we did say the first person to Instagram us.
With a picture of the answer on a piece of paper, yeah. Gets it automatically.
And that is?
Skips the End Podcast.
Boom. That's how you enter, guys. No excuses.
Get involved.
Thank you.
died. It's not that new, but it feels very, very new because it's only been a couple of episodes. But we're at 2011 on our new spectacular feature, Skip Back in Time. Now, the year's 2011, not too long ago, but when I was doing my research, I'm not sure if you two felt, but you were like, what? This film was only a couple of years old. That's the first thing I did. But Ben, surprise me. What did you pick as your film for 2011? The best film out of all of them. Forget this, forget that. This is the one that you're telling me is the best film ever made in 2011.
I think it will shock you. It will surprise you. But I've not got a lot to say about it because it's Thor. And we just covered it.
Yeah, I did think that might be yours.
Yeah, it's a great film. It was an absolute banner year for comic book films that year, as well as Thor. First Captain America came out, X-Men First Class, a lot of good superhero movies. But Thor, for me, was not only the best superhero movie, it was my favourite film above and beyond all that particular year.
Wow.
So nothing else to say about it after the last segment?
I think we've covered it.
Fair enough.
It's fair enough, yeah. Good choice. I actually didn't even realise that was 2011, so wow. Good on you, Thor. Adam.
Me then. Okay, so I've gone with a film that it might shock you a bit. I'm not sure if people are going to think, with all the comic book films that came out that year, as Ben just listed them off, Drive.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Superb film.
So Ryan Gosling plays this driver who, moonlights as a getaway driver, and he gets involved with a woman and ends up going a bit crazy and killing a lot of people.
Yeah. There's that scene in the elevator, isn't he, where he stomps that bloke to death.
Amazing. It was such a good film. And we actually, at the time, were with Virgin Media, and they were giving away tickets to, like, premieres.
Other companies are available.
Not many, but...
They were giving away premieres to, like, certain tickets to, like, certain films before their advanced screenings kind of thing. Yeah. And me and my friend got two tickets, went to see Drive.
Nice.
And we came out, and the woman was like, what did you think? We're like, that was one of the best films I've ever seen. And she was like, I thought it was crap. I'm like, get away from me.
Shame.
Unbelievable.
I've always wanted his jacket in that film. I'd look like a twat in it, but I've always wanted it. Yeah. It looks cool.
I bet you can get it on eBay.
And I think we've spoken about it before, but what a soundtrack, what a score. Mm-hmm. By then, Cliff Martinez, former drummer of the Chili Peppers.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
The guy just turns out a fantastic score. It's very 80s, so I'm sure Mark loves it as well.
Of course.
Yeah, I'm listening to it right now in this headphone. I'm not actually doing anything with you guys. I'm just sitting here listening.
There it is. Skip Back in Time, my favourite film of 2011, Drive.
Now, that film obviously starred Ryan Gosling and was directed by Nicholas Winding Refn.
Yep.
Did you guys see the follow-up film that the two of them did, Only God Forgives?
I did, yes.
Only God Forgives them for making it.
Yeah, because no fucker else will. No. It was an absolute disgrace of a film.
Yeah.
This is a spoiler alert for people who are listening, but, you know, you shouldn't see this anyway, so it doesn't matter. There's a scene towards the end. There's a whole line in the film, where he's clearly got borderline Oedipal thoughts about his mother, and, you know, they have this very odd relationship. And then at the end of the film, he kills his mum, or his mum dies, and then he stabs her in the stomach, basically in her womb region, then puts his hand into her womb. And it's meant to be this big symbolic moment about him returning from whence he came, but it's just the most pretentious Starbucksy bullshit I've ever seen.
Do you think Lars von Trier got involved in that scene? Just like, can I just let me have one little bit of this film?
They're probably best mates.
Ugh.
But if it was a Lars von Trier film, he'd have been wanking while he did it.
Yeah. Yeah. And he'd been dead the whole time.
Let's not associate that with Drive. Drive is a fantastic piece. And it is a masterpiece.
It is very, very good. And I can't believe that recently they redid the score with Radio 1 and got loads of nobodies to do a new soundtrack for it. And it ruined it. So, idiots.
Like Shame. One Direction.
God, I have no idea. But you'll be surprised by this. I know that Adam's going to say, yeah, good choice. Ben, you're going to think I'm an arsehole. Super 8.
I don't think you're an arsehole. I've never seen it. I just have no interest in seeing it.
This is your chance to call me an arsehole if you want. Mark, yeah, you're an arsehole. Super 8 is the closest thing you're going to get to an 80s film in the modern day. It really is. You watch that and it feels like Stand By Me or The Lost Boys or Goonies or Gremlins. It's superb. J.J. Abrams delivers the closest thing that I'm ever going to get to another 80s film, and I loved it, and it's by far the best film of that year.
Isn't it Abrams?
Whatever his name
is. It's J.J. Abrahams.
Abraham Lincoln, but no, he is superb. Watch it, Ben, if you've not seen it, because the train crash itself in that film is spectacular.
Much,
it really is.
Much lens flare?
This is actually the film that caused all that as well, because I think it was before he did the second Star Trek film. And he goes insane on it. Literally, let's have a drinking game. Every time we see it, we can have a shot because it is insane and it's too much.
But hopefully he's going to... It is, it is.
He's picking faults with his favourite film.
The lens flare is over the top. And once you notice it, it's there all the way through.
Yeah.
But
do you ever see The Alien?
Yes.
What's it like?
I'm not going to tell you because you'll go, oh, dead to me.
It's not like E.T.
No, and at the end, the kid loves him and the
just
alien saves
me.
Him.
Does he look like Mac from Mac and
The alien is very weird looking. It's a bit like Cloverfield, but with a smiley face.
Oh, there's a surprise. Another film that J.J. Abrams was involved in.
Abrahams. But yeah, he he picks up the kid at the end, is about to kill him, but looks at him and the kid's like, no, I can relate to you. We both haven't got parents and people around us that love us. And it's like, okay, let's him live. And then he goes off to his spaceship. It's all there, ready to go off back to the planet, but doesn't quite go. But his mom of the kid left him a necklace and he's holding the necklace because it's pulling all the metal from the city towards to make this spaceship. And it's the final thing. And he learns to let go of his mom that passed away. The necklace hits the rocket. And that's the final piece to then send him back home.
I hate all of that. every single thing you've just said then upset me.
I don't know, guys. It might not sound like Mark's very enthusiastic when he talks about his favourite film of 2011. But we can assure you, here recording, he's getting very excited about it.
Next week's rewatch. But yeah.
I love Super 8. I think it's a great film. It's a film that it has rewatchability. You can literally sit and watch it again.
Is that what rewatchability means?
It is.
I've
just decided to explain that for everyone. But yeah, I love it. I know, Ben, you hate child actors as a general rule.
I hate children.
So a film full of children, not going to be for you.
Shouldn't have to.
Except unless it's in a documentary, apparently.
At the very end of the film, the kids themselves make a zombie film using a Super 8 camera,
yeah,
and it shows that you're over the credits, and that's really cool. Really cool.
That's the best bit of the film.
No, it's a good film. It's my highlight. This beat Drive, it beat Thor, it beat all these classics. So I'm sticking with it. Next week, we're going to 2010.
Yay.
It's going to be interesting.
It's a big year.
It's been a good year.
Massive. Mm. So next week, 2010.
Rewatch this week, fellas, was 1989 classic, directed by Tim Burton, Batman. Mark, I'm going to throw it out to you first. So I guess the question is, ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Only when I'm drunk. I'm not going to lie to you now.
You heard me a second ago.
Thank you, Ben.
You're welcome.
Honestly, from the bottom of my heart, it's been at least 10 years since I visited this film. Wow. I always used to think, I think it's because Tim Burton's released so much dog shit recently. Well, actually, for a long time, probably about 9 years, he's released shit after shit after shit. And I just thought, ah, fuck him. But then to go back, oh, it is, you know, whatever he releases now, I don't care. I'm not going to go and see it, you know. Yeah. Big Fish was okay. That was his last, like, man, that'll do. But then since then, he's just, I'm not going to talk about it. Let's talk about the good here. So he went and made Batman. I put it on. And for 2 hours, I was glued to it. I forgot how good Jack Nicholson was. I forgot how good Gotham is and how that should look. And that's how to bring a graphic novel or comic to life and how it should look. I've associated it with Nolan's universe for far too long. And I needed to go back to this to really appreciate it. Because a lot of people used to say to me, yeah, I like the Joker. Heath Ledger's good, but you need to go back to Jack Nicholson. I went, no, Heath Ledger's God. But this is going to cause Adam to have a debate in a minute, I hope. Hopefully all of us will do this, but the best superhero movie ever made.
Really?
Yeah.
You're putting that out there?
Yeah.
In public?
I have only watched it a few days ago.
Yeah. Best superhero movie ever made.
Yeah.
That is a big...
Thank you.
...big call. Just get me a voucher or something.
No, thank you. I'm going to keep saying it. I will kiss you.
I'll do whatever you want me to.
No, because you've given us crap. Some weeks, you know, I feel bad now about Clerks 2 and stuff. You know, you've given us something that
you should really, anyway.
Yeah, this is just magnificent. And we're not going to talk about this at all. There's a band to talk about it. But as soon as I watched it, when I watched Return, straight away. Oh, yeah.
I watched them back to back as well.
And Adam, you're superb in that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Best thing you've ever done.
I guess, so you want to hear my opinion then, I assume, at this stage.
That's the end of the rewatch, next week.
I'm not going to talk about it in the same vein that Mark did. I like Batman. I like the original Batman film. It's great, and it was kind of the start of the more gothic style of superhero film.
Yeah.
And Burton does an unbelievable job. I do disagree with Mark with the way he said this is how you should bring Gotham to screen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that is Gotham City. I think that's more of a Tim Burton take on Gotham. As Keaton, talking positive, Keaton is the best person to strike that balance between Bruce Wayne and Batman so far.
Yeah.
Bale was a great Bruce Wayne, a moderate Batman.
Mm-hmm. Big words.
Kilmer, same stuff.
Clooney,
terrible Batman, terrible Bruce Wayne. Shame. Keaton nailed it.
Yeah.
I'd still only give him sort of 8 out of 10 for both. I'm hoping Ben Affleck gets 10 out of 10 for both. He's got the charm and charisma. And then he's jacked up as well for this. Yeah. So we'll see. But talking about Batman, Keaton is superb. Nicholson is superb. Still the third best Joker I've ever seen.
So Cesar Romero, number one?
No, Mark Hamill.
Fair enough.
Mark Hamill from the animated stuff. He's perfect. Heath Ledger's second. All about the way he fits the style of Gotham that was put on screen. Nicholson's Joker fits the style of Gotham Burton put on screen to a T, but he's too... The thing about the Joker is he's super sane. That's the whole point about him. He's not insane, he's super sane. He's realised that he's above everything if he bees this way. Nicholson's Joker isn't like that.
He's just unhinged.
Yeah. Mm. And Ledger's Joker, for the world he was in, was that Joker. He was that super sane Joker. He was just, I can do anything because I've got a plan. Whereas Nicholson's Joker never really seemed to have a plan. I mean, do you guys agree?
It's an interesting thought. I've never thought of it in those terms. I must say I've never conceived of the Joker as being super sane. I'm not saying you're wrong. It's just not something that I've ever thought of.
Yeah, maybe it's just the fact that, you know, I'm such a huge Batman comic book fan.
Yeah.
These are the terms in which I see the films. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think Nolan's trilogy is perfect. I think it's good, great for what it is. It's a more down-to-earth, realistic take on Batman and the Batman universe. Burton's is a great gothic, cartoony sort of universe. And like I said, Keaton's great in what he does. Nicholson's great at what he does. Most of the cast, I mean, Billy Dee Williams plays when he's on screen as Harvey Dent, plays a good Harvey Dent as a district attorney.
I forgot he was even in it until I rewatched it the other day.
Yeah. But for me, the Joker's just a bit too unhinged in it, which is an odd accusation to level, but he never really seems to have an end goal.
I really like the film, not as much as Mark, but I found it to be that I liked it because it was fun, because of the Joker's performance, because he's unhinged, and the way Burton makes his films, there's always a certain amount of levity to them, a lack of realism that make them innately fun. But then I think of something like the Nolan Batman films, which seem like they could take place in the real world. They're just a hyper-real version of reality. So I enjoy them both, but for very different reasons.
Yeah, they are literally chalk and cheese. Mm. What I wish I could see, because I think the story that Christopher Nolan gave us with his brother was perfect. I think The Dark Knight as a story was amazing and better than this Batman or Batman Returns. But I think as a filmmaker and the acting and the special effects and the actual fight scenes, where I always feel Nolan suffers a little bit with that. That's one of my things that I don't think he does right. I think he's always too up close. I never really believe the fights. That's my opinion. I think he always gets that wrong. He does all the long shots and the IMAX and the big effects, but when it comes just to a few little punching, I never really believe it. I think, for me, I'd like to see Tim Burton work with Nolan's story and then produce the perfect Batman film.
Do you think?
Yeah. So,
curiously enough, one of the things that I picked up on that I didn't like from Batman was the fight scenes.
Really?
I thought it looked like a badly staged wrestling match. You know, wrestling in the 70s when they weren't quite as good as they are now, when the punches clearly weren't connecting. That's what it looked like. There were some fights that he had in alleys, and it was too much like the 60s
Adam West Batman.
But that's what
I like. I like the pow,
yeah, but
bam,
that's not
wow.
what I want,
no,
from,
you want
from a
real
modern movie. Yeah.
But it's 25 years old, this film.
Yeah, still that's, relatively modern, though, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it is, but we... That's another film as well that didn't look too dated. You're not thinking this is made in the 80s. You're thinking this is a lot more recent, this film. And Christian Bale is a good Batman. He is. He's cool. He's the, I've got all the money as Bruce Wayne. I'm the cool guy. You warm to him at that part. But Keaton, I did forget how good he was. It's only Birdman recently that got us back into talking about him, and he did have years off. Mm. But I don't think you'll ever get a better Batman, in my opinion. I just think he was quirky. He had you warmed to him, but he was also a badass, and I just liked him. You know,
I think
just
one of the great things about how good he was is that he was known primarily as a comedic actor prior to that film, and then when he was announced in the part, fans went mental, as comic book fans so often do, and it was something like 50,000 letters were sent to the studio saying, this is terrible, it's the wrong decision, we won't watch it, get rid of him, bring in someone who's actually, you know, more like Bruce Wayne, blah, 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 blah. They soon changed their tune once they saw the film. But it was amazing how people were against him.
It's one of the interesting things about comic book fans, though, because like you've just stated that then, and Heath Ledger got a very similar response.
Yeah.
When he was cast as the Joker, people were like in outcry over it. How is this guy from A Knight's Tale and 10 Things I Hate About
and
You?
And Brokeback Mountain.
I'm going to be playing the Joker on screen. And then people are doing the same over Affleck.
Yeah.
They're not even giving him a chance.
Yeah.
It's ludicrous. I mean, going back to the point about the fight scenes, I disagree with that. I think Nolan's fight scenes are good enough for the film they're based in. And if you gave Tim Burton Nolan's script, it wouldn't work.
Not but, now, because he'd have Johnny Depp in it and his wife as bloody Catwoman. It'd be dreadful. They'd be singing and dancing with loads of Oompa Loompas and stuff.
I just think that because Nolan's scripts are grounded in such realism, Burton wouldn't be able to deal with that.
Yeah. That's not his strong suit, is it, realism?
I mean, I think I've got a huge chip on my shoulder about this film anyway, because one, it's not as good as the sequel.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. Penguin is a much better villain, and Danny DeVito puts in a great performance as him.
Don't speak in the third person. You mean I, but...
but no, I think it's the certain aspects of that, really, because the Joker is one of my favourite villains of all time by far.
Yeah.
As an actual character and a creation. And I don't like how they changed everything with him. They gave him a name to start with.
Jack Napier.
They'd already put him in a gang, you know, as head of one of these gangs. And they made, you know, I just didn't like it. And then they also had him being responsible for the death of Bruce Wayne's parents way back when. And I talk about comic book fans complaining about stuff, and that's exactly what I'm doing now. I hated that.
Yeah, I thought they made too many changes. I think some of the stuff about him sort of falling in the vat of acid, they'd taken that from, was it Alan Moore or Frank Miller's work where they got that from? Or, I mean, I think that was established canon, but I think it was Alan Moore who brought that origin back to the
fore.
Yeah,
the Red Hood slash Killing Joke stuff. The vat of acid at his chemicals.
So I like that they used that, but the whole, you know, giving him the name Jack Napier and as you say, he was some gangland boss's henchman and all this sort of stuff. I didn't see the need for that. Or retconning it so that he was the guy that killed the Waynes.
Exactly.
Yeah, there were things that were unnecessary. They didn't ruin the movie or anything, but there was no need to make that change.
That's why I like Nolan's Joker, so, because he comes out of nowhere. We never find out where he came from.
Yeah.
He gives us about 6 or 7 different reasons that make you believe why, but it's all a bit like, what?
And that's the comic, though. I mean, the Joker's had about 10 or 12 different backstories, and one of my favourite things about the Joker is he says it himself. He says, sometimes I remember it one way. Sometimes I remember it a different way. Mm.
Jared Leto, you've got a hell of a job ahead of you, mate.
He's a guy I can see doing a good job as well.
Yeah,
I've been let down by the pictures so far. I know you can't judge a book by its cover, but the pictures of him as the Joker so far. I forget what magazine it was, but some magazine or website said that he's not come as the Joker, he's come as Keith Flint from The Prodigy. And they actually showed a picture of 90s Keith Flint where he looks exactly the same as Leto.
He looks a bit more like Billy Idol.
As you know, we're big fans.
A couple of things I wanted to point up on. I didn't remember this film being as violent until I watched it again. Mm. So when he's got this feather pen and sticks it straight in his throat, I completely like, whoa, I didn't remember this ever being this violent. And one thing that I do, you'll probably both disagree, but I think it's the coolest Batmobile around.
Oh no, I love
that. Absolutely beautiful. And the way it all moves and stuff, that didn't look dated. It was cool. It was slick. I like all the gadgets. And that was a lot more, for me, I preferred that to the Tumblr kind of effect.
I never liked the Tumblr. I thought the music was great. Danny Elfman's score, especially that iconic theme that they still use now. It's on the Lego Batman games, isn't it?
Yeah,
they use
it is,
the same theme tune. And I think that's great.
There's one question actually I wrote down that I wanted to ask you, Adam. When I watched Batman Returns, and you know, I was getting into it, I just want to know one thing. A lot of actors I read take something from set to kind of keep to show. What did you keep from that film?
The umbrella.
Nice. Good work.
Go on eBay. I too watched Returns immediately after watching the first one, because historically, because I've not seen either film for a decade or so, in my mind I've always just assumed that the first one was better than the second. So I thought, I was in the mood, so I thought, right, I'm going to watch the second one, and it is so much better.
I think
Returns is great. I think it's an overall better story. I think it's the action's better, and I think Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman is something really incredible in that film.
It was interesting on set.
And Christopher Walken's there again, you know, like, what a legend. I forgot his part was that big.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Michelle Pfeiffer, it did actually make me realise that Anne Hathaway was nowhere near as good.
And I think, and I'm someone who despises Hathaway, but I think she's rather good in Dark Knight Rises,
but
compared to Michelle Pfeiffer,
It's a long way off, guys, but I am looking forward to the next time us three sit around and talk about Batman. We will be about Affleck and what he does with the character and if we love it or not. Because it is going to, I don't believe, I'm putting it out there now, that all of us will be like, yeah, it's all right. We're going to either absolutely love it and be like, fair play, he's nailed it and he should have his own films now and go off and do it. Or that was the worst thing I've ever seen.
The thing is, the issue is going to be the fact that it's not a film just about Batman.
No.
He is one cog in a larger machine. It's not going to be 2 hours of Affleck getting to get to grips with the character, both Batman and Bruce Wayne. It's him having to do that alongside Superman and the 14 other superheroes they've shoehorned into it. So I don't know that we're going to get straight away a great result feel of how good he is.
I'm waiting for the news that we're getting the Suicide Squad in the same film. They're going to mash the two films together.
Did you read this one little thing, off topic a little bit, but on the trailer, if you pause it, there's a Riddler question mark on one of the scenes now in the background. There's a big rumour now that the Riddler's also going to be in it. And it's like,
why not?
God, just throw him
all
in.
Everyone else is in it.
I don't necessarily believe that he's going to be in it. I think they might just do a few little Easter eggs like that, because this is an established Batman. So all his villains potentially should have already appeared.
Yeah.
But and that's one of the things that the 1989 Batman, it was very much establishing the character, but it wasn't an origin story.
Yeah, other than like a flashback scene to his parents dying, we just accept the fact that he became Batman. He is that.
Whereas Bale, Nolan showed us where his Batman came from, how he learned, what he did, why he did it as well.
It was interesting, because I was reading an interview with Michael Keaton at the weekend, and he was saying that one of the reasons why he never did the third one is because when he read the script, it was rubbish, for one thing. And he wanted them to do a prequel. He wanted them to go back and explore where this guy came from. Yeah. And he wanted to have been involved in that. And he said that, I think he was at the cinema seeing something completely different, but Batman Forever was on. And he said he stuck his head around the door for 10 minutes and was like, I made the right decision.
Yeah, 100%. The last thing I want to say about this film, the suit. Now, I think it looks cool as.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong, I heard there was a lot of production issues. Some of it was made with iron as well around the parts, and it got to the point where it was really hard to work with. But I think the suit looks cool. I think that's how the Batman should look, and it's just very defined. And it's, you know, watching the most recent trailer when Affleck's looking at his kind of cast suit, that I think they're going to return to that sort of look instead of the easy to move.
Yeah, I mean, they need to find a happy medium between a suit that looks badass and one that the actor can actually work in comfortably.
Yeah.
Because the Michael Keaton one, he couldn't move his neck. Like, you see these scenes of him walking through Gotham City and he's upright and looking straight forward when people are at his side talking to him. And you think, oh yeah, that's just because he's a badass. No, it's not. It's because he can't physically turn his head in the suit.
And that's something that Nolan's universe established, because the first suit they designed, he couldn't do that.
Yeah.
And then in The Dark Knight, he actually requests another suit because he'd like to be able to turn his head.
Yeah.
And that was based on the fact that Bale did actually act, because I actually want something so I can turn my head.
Interesting fact, this is true. My granddad George, my mum's dad, helped work on that suit, and it was made in Iron Bridge in Broseley.
Yeah.
And he worked at an iron factory, and they had loads of stuff they had to make for that. He made some of the weapons as well.
Nice.
That's cool.
Didn't keep any of it or anything, but yeah, nice.
Shame. Just going back to the Michael Keaton wanting a prequel.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that they didn't do that, because it's not like there wasn't anything canonical then, because Batman Year One was actually first published in 87,
mm-hmm.
May 87, I think it was. So it's not like they didn't have a good origin story to already use. So I find it odd that they didn't think, oh yeah, we can go back and do something about that.
Yeah.
I'm completely guessing here, but my assumption is they wanted to use some established villains. They knew that the Riddler would sell a lot of toys, so that's why they had to do Batman Forever the way they did it.
Plus Jim Carrey said, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And he was hot then.
Something interesting that I read yesterday as well, that Robin Williams was up for the part of the Riddler in Batman Forever, but he turned it down because he was actually offered the role of the Joker in Batman, because because Jack Nicholson had already turned it down at this point, for whatever reason. So they went to Robin Williams. He went, yeah, great, I'll do it. Then Jack Nicholson changed his mind. Oh, no, they said to Jack Nicholson, oh, by the way, Robin Williams is going to do it if you don't. So Jack Nicholson went, oh, I'll do it then. So Robin Williams was so angry at them for just using him as leverage that when they went after him for Riddler, he was like, no, go fuck yourselves.
I'm off to see Mrs. Doubtfire. I think it's time to rate this now, boys. I have no idea how we're going to score this. I completely...
Well, you're going to give it a 10.
Crazy. No, I'm going to give it a 9.
Yeah, fair enough. It's a 7 for me. It's a good film. If this was 1989, I'd probably give it a 9. But I think superhero films and the Batman franchise specifically has moved on so much that I couldn't give it any more than a 7, I think.
I'm dead on with Ben. Exact same reasons, 7.
Does that get an 8? Is mine enough of a leverage? I don't know. It's a close one. 2 7s and a 9. I don't think we've ever been in this.
A 7 overall.
Yeah. It's a high 7, but it's a 7.
Okay, I'm happy with that.
Okay. And so next rewatch, Mark.
Right then. So this is going to be quite interesting, this one.
Well, no, because you've just done Batman. He's really loved that. Absolutely adored it. So I assume he's going to repay the... Seeing as he's been thanking you so much throughout this entire thing, I assume it's going to be something that you're going to love, like Jersey Girl.
Yeah, more rats, isn't it?
One thing that I don't know if all the listeners know this... Us three never genuinely, 100%, swear on my life here, know what we're going to do as the next rewatch. None of us have got any inkling here.
Yeah.
It's only on this episode now that Ben will find out what we're going to watch. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to have one more stab at Kevin Smith.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Just trust me on this one, okay? I don't think I can... Listen back to the last episode when you're laying into him for Clerks 2 and think, yep, okay, we'll close that book here. I want to give him one last chance, and if you hate it after this, I will never make you watch another Smith film again.
Why?
Big words.
Let it die.
So what we're going to do, this is different this week. I've got an envelope here with loads of screwed up.
Oh, Christ. So it could actually be more rats or chasing Amy, isn't it?
You're basically picking the shit.
Yeah.
Now, the options are going to be Red State, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
No.
Clerks, Zack and Miri Make a Porno.
No, seen it. Shit.
Jersey Girl.
No.
Chase and Amy.
No.
Dogma, or More Rats. So you've got a 1 in 9 of picking something shit, but let's see. I'm not going to have any... There's no fixing here.
I'm sorry, it's not a 1 in 9 of picking something. It's 8 in 9 of picking something shit.
Now, what Dogma. I want you to do is literally open it up and read it out. Whatever it says, okay?
Yeah, it was all a ruse. We're watching Mac and Me.
Next week, no more fucking Kevin Smith, Mac and Me.
Mac and Me. Never have I been so relieved to be watching Mac and Me. Christ.
Next week,
fair
Mac
play,
and Me.
Mark. Fair play.
Questions and answers time. Send your questions on Twitter. We'll answer them all. Facebook, you name it, we'll answer it. Unless it's crap. So the first question this week on Facebook from Alex Smith DeSing. What's the worst comic book hero they could make a film out of?
Are we talking about one that they've already made a film out of?
You can go with that. Or what would be the worst? I'm liking that he's picked a good, you know, to go the theme of the questions.
Well, the worst one that I've seen that exists is a film called Steel, which starred Shaquille O'Neal as a superhero.
Did he actually get people with his basketball or something?
I don't know. I can't remember. I saw it when I was a kid, but it was an atrocity.
That's an odd question, because even when there's like bad comic book characters, they generally make them quite funny on screen. Someone that I would probably have no interest of seeing on screen. Wonder Woman. really.
It sounds like the director and most of the team are agreeing.
Yeah, because Michelle McLaren, after our last episode, we said our only hope for it is Michelle McLaren. Yeah. She's actually left it now.
Yeah, and the woman who's replaced her, whose name I forget, but it was the woman who was initially scheduled to do the second Thor film, but she left Thor Dark World over creative differences, and now she's gone to a DC project where the last female director was left over creative differences. So that's going to go well. Patty Jenkins, I think.
Yeah, we'll see how long she lasts there, basically.
So on the next podcast, we're going to announce who's replaced her.
Yeah.
Probably Angelina Jolie.
I guess I would have said, up until seeing Guardians of the Galaxy, spoiler alert, I would have said Howard the Duck. But I thought the little snippet of Howard at the end was funny enough that I can imagine. I trust the Marvel guys enough that they could probably make a film out of it and it'd be worth watching. A slight tangent, something that I didn't like, because I watched the new Fantastic Four trailer today, and I thought that Ben Grimm, the Thing, looked awful.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, have they done a bad job, or is it just one of those characters that is innately always going to look daft in real life? So I just don't know. Because in the old versions of the films, which we know were terrible, but they went sort of cartoony with the Thing's look, whereas this new one, they've tried to make it more realistic, and he does look like a bunch of rubble, but it still looks daft. So I just think there's nothing they can do with that character in real life.
Shame.
Well, that answers your question, Neil.
Via Twitter, Supernerds UK. You should check them out on YouTube. They've got some really good videos. At Supernerds_UK. If Batfleck does well as Batman and has his own trilogy, which villains would you like to see him go up against?
Very interesting. You've obviously got the ones they've kind of cast already. Then, so you've got the Joker and Harley Quinn. Killer Croc has been apparently cast for Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy I'd actually choose. Because as ridiculous as he could be, he's physically imposing enough to test Batman. A more maniacal Two-Face, a kind of an in between Nolan's one and the dreadful Batman Forever one.
Yeah.
And a less jokey Riddler.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the Riddler as a character, but you've got to be careful of how daft and out there he is. You need to ground him a bit for it to be a realistic enemy.
And if you're looking for a Penguin, I'm still available.
Thinking of that, about how obviously you're angling to get your job back. Just going back to Batman Returns, or first Batman, I read something which must be bollocks, but Adam West said that he was surprised that he didn't get the call for the film. And it's like, you were about 40 in the 60s.
Yeah.
How old would he have been?
They were going to save him for Yoda in the next Star Wars, but yeah. Sorry, Adam West, if you're listening. I would say Jason Todd. That would be cool. I've looked at him on Google and thought that would work. But if it's going to be Zack Snyder, just don't bother. Sorry.
If they are going down the Dark Knight Returns route with Bruce Wayne, I'd like to see them do the Dick Grayson Joker.
Yeah.
What about the Mole?
Crazy.
Remember him? The Mole character. He's dreadful.
This thing is, Batman has such an odd gallery of villains.
Yeah.
Like, there's some of them which not many people would have heard of, like the Mad Hatter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would be an interesting one, but people haven't heard of him, they wouldn't go and see a film with him.
Hush, I think they could do Hush. A good version of Hush.
Nice.
Even just The Long Halloween.
Yeah.
As a story arc.
Mm-hmm.
What about a crossover with Manape? Michael Layton, what do you think will make more money? Avengers or Star Wars?
I think Avengers.
It's tough, that. On one hand, Avengers is coming off a huge successful run of films, critically and commercially successful films, all building towards this film. So it has an inbuilt fan base. It's going to do ridiculous money. On the other side of that, you've got Star Wars, which is coming off the back of three atrocious films. So it's lost a bit of cultural cachet. But then again, on the other hand, it's a new Star Wars film. People are going to go and see it.
And it's out at Christmas, so families all go. Yeah. And
I think that Ben just hit the point of, because not everyone who watches things like Avengers also watches Star Wars, whereas there's more overlap from the Star Wars demographic into the Avengers demographic, I feel. So I think more people who love Star Wars also love Avengers than people who love Avengers also loving Star Wars.
My answer's going to be Star Wars will beat it. I think everyone in the world's going to go and see Star Wars. So I just have a feeling, come on, you've got to go and see it. JJ's nailed it. And I just think it will. Overall, there's more old people that want to go and relive their childhood. Every dad's going to want their kid to go, look, this is why I keep wanting to watch Star Wars. I can just see it doing it. But
so Adam's saying Avengers, you're saying Star Wars, and I'm going to get splinters in my arse from sitting on the fence and say, I simply don't know.
So we'll come back to this episode in about February and we'll answer that and see who's right. At Billy Bob, but Bob's with two Bs. It's not actually, unfortunately, Billy Bob Thornton.
Shame.
Love the music on your episodes. Sorry it's not movie related, but want to know what some of your favourite bands are.
Oh, nice.
Biffy Clyro. Love them. Marmosets, Royal Blood. Actually been lucky enough to see Marmosets and Royal Blood recently. I did a Royal Blood gig review for the website, actually, skipsin.co.uk. Yeah. Funeral for a Friend. Did an episode with Matt Davis, the lead singer of Funeral for a Friend. That's on Podomatic and iTunes.
Yeah, my top three bands of all time, Deftones, Queens of the Stone Age, Mastodon.
Yeah, Fry's Deftones, Pearl Jam, Brand New, Biffy Clyro, Hellas for Heroes, probably my favourite band ever, Reuben. If you've never heard Reuben, check them out. But yeah, we all absolutely love music. And that's the reason I started talking to Ben. He came into work one day with a Deftones t-shirt on.
Yeah.
And I thought, that guy's cool.
We actually have a similar story. Like, me and Mark started speaking because he saw me at work with a Biffy Clyro t-shirt on.
No, I thought you had a really nice arse.
And that too.
But, but yeah, thank God for those bands, eh?
Yeah.
At Sinclair77, worst superhero film ever made.
Steel. Told you earlier.
What, Man of Steel?
No, Steel. With Shaquille O'Neal.
Green Hornet.
God, that was wank, wasn't it?
Yeah.
God, I'd forgotten about that.
Elektra.
Yeah, that was poor.
Or Daredevil.
Yeah, also terrible.
I thought Daredevil had one redeeming aspect. Actually, no, it didn't.
I was going to say, what would that be?
I was just trying to think then. I was like, no.
I quite like the theme tune by Rob Zombie.
Even anything that I partially liked about the film Daredevil has been killed by the Netflix show.
Yeah, the show pisses all over that film.
And Series 2's confirmed last week, so that's going to be good.
Lovely stuff.
At Davy Dungeon. 2015 is absolutely crazy for films. At the end of the year, who do you think will have given us the best film?
See, on this one, I am going to say Star Wars.
Ant-Man.
No, it could be good.
Star Wars. I've got a feeling. As much as, and I'll probably get crucified with this as I have been by you two, the recent trailer didn't excite me as much as everyone else.
Dead Inside.
Ridiculous.
I do think it's going to be the best film of the year, probably.
Chewie, we're home.
Done.
Three words, dude.
My name's Danny.
I'm looking forward to Jurassic World. I think that will make me feel like a kid again. But as soon as Star Wars comes out, I honestly think we'll be talking about it for months. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll agree. At WeUK23, if you could... this is what I like. People have listened that we're doing a superhero special and they've took the time to make them related. If you could live the life of a superhero, who would you choose and why? I'll answer this while you two think. I'd be Batman because he's cool. He'll have loads of money and get loads of fit women. Great.
Yeah. This reflects poorly on me, but the Punisher.
Ben's right-wing tendencies again.
Doesn't take any shit. Just kills people. Sorts them out.
Barry Allen. I say it all the time. The Flash. I love The Flash. The Flash is awesome. Barry Allen is an amazingly cocky guy. Love him to bits.
Yeah. Tony Stark would be pretty ace as well.
Yeah.
Although most superheroes' lives end in tragedy. Before being reborn three episodes later. Yeah.
Can I be Scott Pilgrim? He's got sort of powers and he's cool.
Well, yeah, I guess he has.
He gets to be Ramona Flowers and play guitar and he's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Final question, nice short one. Date movie choice. So this is from at Zip Zap. Basically, when you're taking a girl on a date, to know if you really want to be with them for the long, for the long run, what film would you choose for them to approve to know if you're going to get on?
Blade Runner.
I love that. That is a great question. He doesn't even have to think about it. If they do you like Blade Runner? No, get out.
If they're not willing to sit through the extended final cut of Blade Runner
and
not speak to me at any point during it, they're done.
When you say during it, the film or?
Yeah.
Degrading. So what happens if they sat there and they watch it all, but then they say, I didn't like it, but at least I sat there for 2 hours, Ben, and watched it?
I'd say that's not good enough, is it? You don't get points for effort.
Punisher. Adam.
I'm quite lucky. I'm with the love of my life at the minute. She likes every film I do.
I'm not a she. I've told you about this.
She likes every film I do, and we're perfect. So
that's the lamest answer I've ever heard. Tell me, what's the film then you watched with your love of your life that you were like, yeah, she's definitely the one? Because she hasn't gone like, oh, I've not heard of Spaced or...
It's the Scott Pilgrim versus the World test.
Nice.
It's not my favourite film of all time, but if you don't like it, I don't like you.
What was the, was that the film that, sorry to mention your past relationships, was that the one where you did take a girl and she didn't like it? And...
I took an ex-girlfriend to see it. We came out of the cinema, I loved it. She said she didn't like it. And not 48 hours later, we'd broken up.
Wow. That's powerful.
That's fair.
It's just, that's the test for me. My current missus hasn't seen The Dark Knight. She has a massive fear of clowns, though, so I'm not going to make her watch it.
Make her watch it.
Yeah, nice. I'm not going to make her watch it. Nice.
Yeah, not going to make her watch it or The Dark Knight.
Genius. Almost Famous for me, because then they would be dead if they didn't like it. And if they did...
Are you going to kill them?
Yeah, definitely. And if they did go with me to watch Dumb and Dumber 2 and loved it and laughed all the way through, I'd leave them there.
Yeah. Yeah, on that sort of side of the equation, I was... seeing this was ages ago, I was probably about 14 at the time, but I was even younger even, but I was seeing this girl and we went to see Sliding Doors starring Gwyneth Paltrow, which I thought was bollocks, but she liked, and the relationship ended soon after. So
that was one of my ex-girlfriend's favourite films. Christ. That didn't last long.
Can there be a film out there that if a girl absolutely loved it, you'd have to dump her?
Yeah, Sleepless in Seattle. Anything of that ilk.
Yeah.
Dead to me.
Okay.
Anything with One Direction. Yeah. Involved, any boy band. If your favourite film is something like Katy Perry, Part of Me, gone.
Yeah. I really wish that I could have been in Katy Perry's Part of Me. There was a part of me that wants to be in her. There is.
Shame.
Degrading.
That's it for questions. Keep them coming at STTE Podcast on Twitter, facebook.com/skiptheendpodcast, or email us podcast@skiptheend.co.uk. Also, if you do listen to our podcast and you love us, please let us know by leaving us a little review on iTunes. It's simple. You rate us out of 1 to 5 stars and just leave a little review and hit submit. It means the world to us and it'll help us and we will love you forever and we'll read out your name and we'll give you presents and everything else. But yeah.
Don't, you know, write checks your ass can't cash.
We'll basically love you. So yeah, keep it coming and thank you.
His ass will cash them.
And that brings us to the end of episode 19 of the Skip to the End podcast. Next time round, we're going to be reviewing Monsters Dark Continent.
Do you know what as well?
What?
Quick spoiler for next week's episode. There's going to be a prize related to that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not even going to reveal what it is. Come back next time and listen. It's the best prize we've given away yet. By far.
And I think we might have a little bit of an exclusive interview to throw in there as well, mightn't we?
Yeah, we've got some time with Tom Green, the director, and some of the stars of the film.
Excellent. And the rewatch is going to be...
Mac and Me instead of Morats. So that's good. Mac and Me, I actually can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be great fun. It's an atrocious film, but it's going to be fun. And Adam, what's the topic?
It's your top 3 monster movies, and I'm quite annoyed because I thought it was going to be a monster special. Then Mark ruined it by not picking Tusk.
Shame.
Mac's a bit of a monster. Yeah, in some way.
He's an alien. The monsters in the Monster Continent are aliens. Yeah, so.
Monster special.
It's all linked. And... I would say that brings us to the end of the episode, but I've got a feeling Mark's going to drop a bombshell on us.
Quick one this week.
Excellent.
I've been thinking of a new idea for an episode. Brilliant. Just a feature.
Go on then.
You two come over to my house.
Hold on, Ben. Yeah. I was going to say now, I don't think this is going to be good.
Yeah, I'm on your side.
Give me a chance, guys. Right, you might actually go, this is great. So there's some films out there when you research, stuff like Ben-Hur, they're like nearly 4 hours long. You can't believe these films are so long, can you? They're really, really long. So what we do, we research the long films, stuff like Passion of the Christ, Green Mile, and you each bring 3 or 4 to my house. Okay?
Yeah. Right.
We put them on and we stay up and we try and watch them. It could be 2-3 days worth, one after another.
Right.
And it's the first one to stay awake out of the whole lot. What's the feature called?
I don't know.
Kip to the End.
Fucking hell.
Did you like it?
That's the worst one yet. That is the worst one yet.
Ben,
stay tuned.
We're
next
right.
Week.
I'm nostalgic for the days of Hungry Hungry Skippers.
Next week, listen out for more of this. And thanks for listening.
Shouldn't have to.